As far as North Korea is concerned, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't like to talk about what I have planned, but I have some pretty severe things that we're thinking about. That doesn't mean we're going to do them. I don't draw red lines. But I think we'll just take a look at what happens over the coming weeks and months with respect to North Korea. It's a shame that they're behaving this way, but they are behaving in a very, very dangerous manner, and something will have to be done about it.
You know, manufacturing is the big challenge at Tesla. It has been really from the beginning. The ideas, the design and all that is pretty straightforward, but actually building them in large quantities is very challenging. Then we get to hear that, well, they did have some problems in the second quarter, couldn't make enough of the big batteries that they needed for the existing cars, the S and the X SUV. So a lot of concern and disappointment.
Japan and the EU are set to pencil in a trade deal Thursday and maybe send a message to Donald Trump too. The pair will commit to signing a full deal soon. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is set to be in Brussels to add clout to the deal. And the ink will hardly be dry before attention turns to the upcoming G20 meeting.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's July 6th, 2017. 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. And we have lots to talk about in our show today. A little bit later on, we're going to introduce you to the human support robot. Toyota is behind this. We'll talk to one of the people designing it, one of the people using it. That'll be in the second half of the program, our thought leader momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, lots of arrows this morning, red arrows. And we begin in Asia, where markets are generally lower there this morning, mostly lower, overshadowed by tensions over North Korea's intercontinental ballistic missile launch and mixed signals on from the U.S. Central Bank. Japan's Nikkei fell almost 0.5%. All of the rest of the indices are lower as well. As we look at some of them this morning, 87 is how much the Nikkei has lost. The Hang Seng off about 57 points, good for about 0.25%. Nikkei off about 0.5%. The Asian Dow, everything's sort of in line with those numbers. Europe, all the arrows are lower as well. The FTSE's off nearly 0.5%. Same story for the DAX. The CAC pushing almost 1%, off about 45, 85, 44. Respectively, and futures are pointing toward weak open this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are off 45 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures lower as well. NASDAQ futures lower by about 40 points this morning, good for more than 0.5%. Gold and silver also trading lower. Crude oil, $45.80 a barrel, up almost 1.5%. Here are some stories that we are watching for you this morning. First, the Fed minutes, the Federal Reserve figuring out when to start unloading much of its nearly $5 trillion in bond holdings. That balance sheet, a major turning point for an economy still healing from the 2008 financial crisis. Some Fed officials want to announce the beginning of the process within a couple of months, according to minutes from the U.S. Central Bank's June meeting released yesterday. That's reducing that balance sheet. Others push for more time to see how the broader U.S. economy fares. Some indication from the minutes that there could be one more rate increase. The best estimates on this looks like it might be later in the year, perhaps toward the end of the year. Other news today comes out of Europe and from Brussels. The news about Brexit is sort of a scratch your head this morning. One minister in Great Britain says that he's actually heard some rumblings that Brexit may not happen. He wasn't really firm on what he has heard, but apparently there is some rumblings that maybe they're trying to backtrack now on this. The EU's chief Brexit negotiator says Britain, though, cannot enjoy frictionless trade with EU partners after it leaves the union. Michael Barnier took a tough position on the Brexit negotiations today, warning there will be negative consequences no matter what. In Great Britain, some of those negative consequences are being felt, and that could be what's behind the rumblings. True Religion brand Jeans files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, but will continue to operate its businesses uninterrupted, according to the company. It's Thursday. That means it's time for our thought leader conversation. And our thought leader today, Don Lloyd, is the Senior Vice President, Manager of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives. He's here on his holiday to discuss holiday trading during big, slow times like this. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Good to be back. Thank you.
2 weeks in a row, you're kind of making me, too much of Don. It's, I don't know, but we're glad to have you here.
You must have lost a bet. I don't know.
Or you lost
it. I'm happy to be here. I love it.
Oh, we're happy to have you. Let's talk a little bit about, because it is vacation time. A lot of people are still on vacation from the Independence Day holiday. It makes us wonder what goes on sort of on the trading floor and in your trading room. I mean, do you have like senior people there? Are they gone? And if not, what's the deal?
Yes. June, July, and August are always those fun summer months. And anything can happen. Usually what happens is exactly that. The more senior people decide they want to take a break, they want to get away. And you basically look at the less experienced people who are don't have that flexibility of picking when they want vacation. And the last thing you tell them is just don't mess anything up. And off you go. And the less experienced men or women sit there white-knuckled, and they try not to mess anything up because the last thing they want to do is call you and say, here's something that happened, and then get yelled at for the next 10 minutes. So we're in that period of time right now. What it means in the market is pretty interesting. You will hear information will be released, events will happen, and the market will just sit there. And you'll say, well, that's odd. Why did the market just sit there? Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, whenever the more senior people come back, all of a sudden that's being mentioned again and the markets start to move. And you're like, well, what just happened? Why didn't they trade on this 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? And that tends to be what happens a lot of time in this period of time.
I know you've shared with us before how things work at with all your screens and the 24-hour nature of things. Do you actually tell people don't press that button and this button, or is it a little bit more entailed?
No, it's not. You give them parameters. Mm-hmm. Here's how we're going to be positioned. Here's where I'd like to stay. I want to stay neutral. Service the flows that come in and just don't do anything fancy. Try not to make a name for yourself. So you give them some pretty straight parameters, and then also, should something unusual happen, and that is always a gray area, give me a call. And I always feel bad, having been, decades and decades ago, that younger, less experienced person in that role. Mm-hmm. You have to make that call. Oh my gosh, do I make the phone call or don't I? Am I going to get yelled at because this is not significant? Why are you bothering me? Or is it going to be, gee, I didn't make the phone call because I thought it wasn't significant, and I'm getting yelled at because they you're going to lose either way. It's sort of like the military. Mm-hmm. When you go through boot camp, anything you say is going to be wrong. So just get ready for it. And if you're going to err ever, pick up the phone and call.
It is interesting because this kind of talks about the workflow and the psychology of, it seems like we're always going 24 hours a day. To be able to say, hey, listen, I'm unplugging. I'm gone for 3 weeks. Yep. That has to help your psychology and the psychology of the market generally, doesn't it?
We're only human, and we need our downtime, and we need that rest. The markets are a treadmill that never stops. You can jump on it 24 hours a day, and you can run yourself to death. But you have to have a balance. You have to take care of yourself physically and mentally, and that does mean disconnecting and getting away. Those are healthy things to do. The lure of the market will always be there, but you know what? It's going to be there 3 weeks when you come back anyway.
Is it that easy though? Is it easy for you not to look at your phone when you're on vacation or pick up an iPad or see the TV?
For the first week, no, I'm still sort of jumpy and fidgety. If the phone rings, you're jumping for the phone to grab it. After about a week, I can disconnect. I basically take my watch off. I turn all the clocks, take them off the wall. I don't want to see time. I don't want to be governed by time. I don't really care what time it is over in Singapore or Tokyo or London or someplace like that. But it takes me a week just to let go where I'm physically relaxed. My kids sense it. My wife senses it. She knows when I hit that relaxed state where I can finally get some mental health into me.
Yeah. So is this year odd in terms of more people on holiday compared with last year, or is it generally sort of average?
Yeah, it depends on the feel of the market when you're going into it. Last year was a fairly active summer. And you can sort of sense it. You know, you don't really want to get away. There's news that's coming out. You just feel like you need to be present. We've had a pretty straight run of this thing for the last 12 months, whether it's been the Fed hiking rates, whether it's been Brexit and UK elections, whether it's been OPEC and oil, you know, fill in the blank. There's been a lot of news out there. There's been a lot of drivers that have been out there in the market. And I think the participants of the market are tired. They just need to exhale, go sit on a beach, have a little daiquiri or margarita or whatever it is, Diet Coke, and watch the sunset and come back sort of refreshed.
To be the underling that is tasked with calling you if something bad happens, I'm curious, what would we qualify as something that would warrant a call to Don on vacation?
Usually anything that's going to, well, usually has moved the market in a significant way. Now, chances are, I probably already know about that or found out about it. And I would probably be more upset if I don't get that phone call because you haven't trained people properly, you know, as far as prioritization. So that can be the first thing. What's just moved the market 2% or 3% or something, you know, major that way. The second thing is if anything is going to happen that's going to take the bank outside of the parameters we set for them. Let's stay this way. Let us service these types of customers. Let us drive this type of hedging business and close this kind of stuff. If it goes outside of that, those parameters, that field of play that you've sort of given everybody to listen to and operate within, I want to call if you're going to be going out of bounds a little bit. Just need a heads up. Simply because I've got bosses too that are up. And, you know, you go outside of that parameter, they're going to want to know why and when. And it can't be, oh, last week we did it. You know, there is a sort of cascading effect upward. And I determine, well, this is important enough now to escalate or not. You know, we'll just keep it at this level. So, you know, after 39 years, I'm still in that same boat as well, where I sort of have to be a filter and make that determination. And most times I get it right, but sometimes you get it wrong.
And this is fascinating because if you're listening to us and you think, well, the markets really didn't react to something today or the trading volume has been flat, it really shows that this is a living, breathing thing that sometimes just is on life support, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Exactly. You know, I mean, a great example is the snap election that they had over in the UK. And Theresa May calls a snap election. She thinks it's going to be a slam dunk where she increases her Conservative Party majority that she holds. And just the opposite happens. She loses the majority. You know, now she's got to run around and talk to other party groups to sit there and get the majority of votes that she's going to need to sit there and operate a government. I mean, there's 650 seats in the House of Commons. And you need 326 to sit there and have a functional government with a majority. And she's got 318. So she doesn't have a majority. She not a functional operating government that or the majority presence that she has. So she's got to reach across lines now and pull other groups in. She didn't have that. You would think that uncertainty and that surprise would have made the British pound sterling weaker against not only the U.S. dollars, but its other major trading partners. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Now, maybe that rears its head again towards the end of summer or later on, you know, next month or so. But you just sit back and you sort of scratch your head a little bit and say, I wonder why that had no impact to the market. I would have taken it as a negative. I would have probably taken a look at my portfolio allocations and maybe rearranged them a little bit because of it. It certainly wasn't expected. So, but that's the fun of the market, is that what you think, it doesn't come out that way sometimes.
In terms of news from foreign exchanges over the last couple of weeks, we've heard a lot about Europe and Brexit in the UK. But we're also hearing some about China, too. And people may be surprised to hear this if they're not in the know on this, but China wants to take over the Chicago Stock Exchange.
Yes. China is looking to expand wherever they want. They want a global presence. Good for them. I mean, they are a very large economy. They certainly want to be and are becoming major players in the world market. When you have 350 million consumers over there, your economy is pretty deep and it's pretty strong. What they lack is infrastructure. compared to the United States, which we're sort of tempered. We have been doing this for a long time. We have the radar and the rudder in place to sit there and drive a big ship called our economy. China has a big ship, too. It's a large economy. But their rudders and their radar screens aren't fully as developed as they are here in the United States. They're getting there, but they're looking to expand. They want that global presence. They want to invest outside of China, and they're looking to Chicago. They're looking to the United States. They're looking all over the world to sit there and invest and to get big. The question is are they ready for it? Do they have the infrastructure? Do they have the controls in place to do that? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the whole China dilemma, you know. Yeah. They're baby Huey. I mean, they're huge. They're out there. But you got to watch them with a real close eye.
And on the flip side of that, too, is are we ready to let them? I know, should we feel a little bit threatened that they want to take over this Chicago Stock Exchange?
Well, I'm a big believer in capitalism and let the markets do what the buyer beware and good for it. I mean, if you have China coming in to U.S. to buy U.S. assets and stock markets and whatnot, and they do it through appropriate means and legal means and ticking the boxes that are required to sit there and do it, by all means. If we don't like that, then we can respond in kind and do something about it, you know, from a pure capitalistic investment approach. But to me, that whole fluidity and lack of barriers is a good thing. So let them come in. It just, if anything, if we don't like it, it just ups our game and makes us improve our game of what we want to do.
Also out there on the geopolitical front, all of this controversy in Saudi Arabia with Qatar and Saudi Arabia and some of the Arab Emirate states. How big of a deal is this making on foreign markets?
Well, it's certainly, again, into the whole mix when it comes to oil and the price of oil and natural gas. But again, it's one piece of an already pretty meaty plate. When you take a look at the price of oil, you know, in the mid to low 40s, there's a lot of supply that's out there. The 24 members of OPEC, they try to regulate that a little bit. They've actually done a pretty good job on cutting their production down. But quite honestly, the U.S., through its fracking and, you know, through innovation, we get better and better and more efficient at pulling oil and natural gas out of the ground. And our costs are lowering and our break-even costs are down, so we can pull more and more oil and gas out of there. And it really doesn't matter too much what OPEC is doing at this state, because our inventories keep going up. We're becoming more efficient. And not to say that OPEC is becoming insignificant, because it's not. Mm-hmm. But they have to understand that innovation and efficiencies continue to advance. And we're pretty good at that. We're pretty good at figuring out better and cheaper ways to pull stuff out of the ground.
Well, Don, thanks for turning on your phone and coming in off vacation to have another chat with us here. And enjoy the rest of your holiday and come back ready and charged.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd is the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives at Associated Bank in our Thought Leader Conversation today. Remember, we do them every Thursday, and you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 541. Glad you're here with us on our Thursday edition. Robotics and artificial intelligence have become a normal part of our lives, from the cars we drive to the food we eat. The advances in the field of robotics have been made at a very fast and measurable way, and now there's technology being tested to help people with limited mobility do more. It's the human support robot from Toyota being designed to assist individuals with everyday activities. We have two with us today who are on the robotics team at Toyota, including a former Special Forces Chief Warrant Officer, Romy Camargo, who's paralyzed from the neck down, is helping test the robot along with technician Doug Moore. They're with us from the Daytona Speedway this morning, where Toyota's been doing a big event there. Gentlemen, good morning. First, let's start with you. Doug to talk a little bit about what this is. Explain what the human support robot is.
Well, the HSR, human support robot, as you mentioned, is part of Toyota's effort for thinking about quality of life for individuals. Most people think of Toyota as just a car manufacturer, but we're really focused on thinking about how do we actually apply mobility to individuals in the home and out of the home. So the HSR is one of those efforts that we've been doing to think, how do we actually impact quality of life for individuals in their home? What are ways we can actually allow people to feel more freedom? And amazing people like Romy have been able to work with us and think about how do we find those needs and match them with the right sort of capabilities that we have today.
Yeah, I want to ask good questions of both of you, but before that, Doug, maybe you could give us a description of the robot, of the...
Sure. So HSR, as I mentioned, stands for Human Support Robot. It's about 3 feet tall, but it can extend higher. It has a single arm with a gripper. It has cameras and a mobile base. And really, it's used as a research platform. So we're thinking about developing core technologies for robotics like computer vision, motion planning, navigation. This is that platform that we'll go to actually move it into the real space, saying how does this actually operate with individuals and homes here in the U.S.
Romy, let's find out how you had how your input was important in this. How did you help guide the development of this?
Well, I'm a wounded warrior. I was shot in the back of the neck during an ambush in Afghanistan on September 16, 2008, rendered me completely paralyzed. So when the Toyota team came and came to my home and they asked me, hey, what do you need to be independent? Or what do you need to have, you know, to have that better quality of life? And I told them, basically, you know, hey, I want the robot to be able to bring me water wherever I'm at, if it's in my office. Or if it's me laying in bed, I want it to be able to bring me, you know, some snacks from the pantry, or, you know, bring my clothes and lay it out for tomorrow so I can get dressed. You know, just finding that independence due to the fact that I'm a quadriplegic and I'm probably the highest level of injury that you'll see, you know, walking around. But with the HSR robot, it just brings me that independence, that mobility that I need throughout the day.
Yeah, let's talk about this, because I'm sure you have, you know what real world is. How is it working in the real world for you?
Well, right now we're working with the research stages and bringing the independence to the person right now. And you know, if it can help me at the highest level, you know, in the future it's going to be able to help, you know, individuals with Alzheimer's, individuals with MS, individuals with stroke. So you know, I'm just the beginning, and we hope to bring it out to the world and help more people than just myself.
Yeah,
I'd also want to say, you know, Romy was one of the first individuals. He is the first individual in the U.S. that we've been able to test the platform with. And he truly has the heart and mind of thinking, how does his work actually go beyond just himself? He wants to truly help other people in the same situation. So as we're in this initial phase of thinking about research, he's been a great opportunity for us to have that really close connection with somebody like Romy.
Yeah, and Doug, in watching the videos of the human support robot, it accomplishes some things that haven't been able to be accomplished, I think, that I haven't seen at least. Like one of the things I was impressed with is how it picked up a piece of paper, sorts of things. So walk us through a few of those.
Yeah, so when we start to think about what is the right solution, what do we want to actually put in a platform like HSR, you know, we go out and assess user needs. So this could be somebody that's elderly, somebody that's in a situation like Romy, and try to figure out, you know, quite often people drop things that need to be picked up off the ground. And that's where the suction came in, that could actually pick up paper off the ground. So, but ultimately, it's really thinking about pairing that specific user need with what the robot is capable of doing. Even though it only has one arm, it's capable of cleaning up a whole room, you know, through human interaction at the moment. But when we get to the point where it actually has the sort of intelligence to do that on its own, it'll be great.
One of the other things, too, that I thought was pretty cool is that it seems to be able to be to have sort of that video conferencing availability if necessary as we move into the future in lots of different scenarios. That remote medical care is going to be important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when ultimately we want to look at this as like a tool, you know, whether that's the remote communication or remote interaction in some ways, but it's a way of connecting people to people. And so if it's a medical sort of, you know, capability or something that we're doing where we're actually just, you know, allowing Romy to do that remotely interaction through the platform, it's really about the person. And this is a tool to make that happen.
And let's talk about, Romy, the interaction, the feel of this as we move into the future. These robots and artificial intelligence almost have the ability to become an assistant of sorts when another human isn't available. Do you see that this becoming that?
Oh, yes, of course. Everywhere from, you know, just the arm picking up the water and giving it to me, that the perfect space and time wherever I'm at. It's absolutely incredible. And then opening my door using facial recognition through its camera, you know, it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, that's where we're going. You know, it's 2017. We're midway through, and you know, the future's more to come. And just by providing me that small independence that we've done right now, you know, I'm just waiting to see a little bit more.
Doug, as you look into developing this further, what do you see as the places that you have to improve on with this robot?
I think there's lots of different areas and components that go into robotics. So, again, you have computer vision, you have motion planning, you have navigation. But I think a lot of the key interactions, understanding how do we work with humans, how do we understand our environment completely? You know, your home is probably different than my home in a lot of different ways. So when we go into those unique environments, we really need to be able to assess and understand what's going on in this environment, where am I? So that understanding of where you are and how to interact with things in that environment is really where we see the next big step, I think.
Is it going to be that this robot is going to adapt to the surroundings you're in, or will your surroundings need to adapt to the robot?
Sure. I think it goes both ways, right? So as we think of different platforms and different environments, each will adapt to each other. So the robot needs to understand what your environment is like and be able to operate in that space. But then you as a user will probably adapt how you behave and do things. You know, imagine using a dishwasher. You know, you may adapt how you clean the plates or something by using that tool. And that tool has advanced over time and how it actually adapts to the user. So it's hand in hand.
Romy, what sort of level of comfort or safety do you have with this robot?
Well, I definitely felt 100% safe. Definitely, you know, felt that independence for a little bit, you know, just by the couple of times that, you know, it brought me the water. You know, it opened the door for me using the facial recognition. I mean, it's absolutely outstanding. Just from the camera and me being outside my door, looking through a window, it could recognize my face. Go back, push the button to open my door, which was absolutely amazing. And just feeling that little bit of independence is where it's at. You know, because I'm a quadriplegic, and I can't move anything from my shoulders down. And I didn't have to have my nurse around, you know, for a little bit. It was awesome. It was a good time.
Doug, what's the next step in development for this? What does the timeline look like?
So the next step in development is actually to continue to go out to users, continue to understand their needs, and continue to see how we can bring those core components of robotics to perform those needs in the home, and really making sure that's a good user experience. You know, we don't want people like Romy to have to feel like they have to program this platform, but we want them to be able to interact with it and have it feel natural in a lot of ways. So those are the next steps. It's really broadening our scope beyond just Romy and also, you know, continuing to work with people like Romy and saying, what can we do? And then finally, once we get there, narrow down. And as you mentioned about quality and safety, you know, Toyota's known for its quality and safety. And so what we ultimately want to deliver is a safe device that, you know, people are so comfortable with working with that they don't want to let go of it once it's in their house.
Romy, thank you for your service. Romy and Doug, thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Romy Camargo, former Special Forces Chief Warrant Officer, and Doug Moore, who's one of the techs at the Toyota robotics team, with the Human Support Robot, HSR.
The opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures off now 70 points. NASDAQ futures off 44. S&P futures down about 10. Looks like it's going to be a weak opening later this morning on Wall Street. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. There was good news and bad news in the agricultural commodity world yesterday. Of course, that probably happens about every day. The good news, wheat futures up for the sixth day in a row. Technical buyers stepping into the market after prices dropped into negative territory. Corn and soybeans closed higher. Corn up for the seventh straight trading sessions, getting weather support, concerns about hot weather stressing the crop as it had stored pollination and prices closed near session highs. The nearby July corn up 4 cents a bushel, December corn up 5 cents. July soybeans gained 12 and a quarter cents yesterday, and November new crop beans up 15. Meanwhile, July wheat ended 3 3/4 cents higher. Now, the livestock story at the Mercantile Exchange, a different story. Live cattle futures extended losses to a more than two-month low as investors liquidated long positions because of declining wholesale beef prices and expectations for weaker cash cattle markets. But for hog producers, pretty good news yesterday in the marketplace. We saw good strength in hog futures with a nearby July up $1.72 a hundredweight, but then a red screen on cattle. The July or the August live cattle contract down $1.50, and the August feeder cattle contract down $2.82. A reminder, Wisconsin's Farm Technology Days opens next Tuesday. We'll run for 3 days on a farm in Kewaunee County, Wisconsin. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday. It is July is 6th. And here's what we have going on today in economic reports. Payroll processor ADP will report how many jobs private employers added in June. The Labor Department will also release weekly jobless claims. The Commerce Department will issue international trade data for May. Freddie Mac will come out with weekly mortgage rates. And the Institute for Supply Management will release its service sector index for June. A couple of those delayed from yesterday because of the holiday this week, 4th of July holiday. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, July 6th.